What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday, March 28th, 2019. This is the Pick Six Podcast. This is not the Pick Six Podcast. This is the Brady Quinn Football Show.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, I don't really have anything for it. I was trying to create my own.
That was pretty good.
That
was pretty good.
No, it wasn't really a good sign. I was going to go with like the high school band theme that they used to play when we'd walk into the stadium. But, yeah, I couldn't really quite recall what that was. So I have no musical talent at all. Like, I can't even remember the lyrics.
Okay.
So my daughter obviously hates me because I can never sing any of the songs she wants to sing.
My wife thinks that I'm, like, a terrible human or that I had a horrible childhood because I can't remember the lyrics to any songs either. But I'm like, look, I don't know. Like, I just worried about other stuff. I don't worry about the lyrics to the kids' songs.
Hey, so what do? Do you just, like, mumble along or do you sing – what you think the lyrics are or should be in that case?
Both? Yes. both. And then I'll make up, like, occasionally I'll make up lyrics. Like, you know, I don't know. We were singing a song about guacamole last night. It doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason why I was singing about guacamole. I'll just make up the lyrics.
Whoa, guacamole's good.
Guacamole's great.
I can see that. Like, sometimes – you know when you eat something that's really, really good and you just start singing about that food?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I get in that mood sometimes. Sometimes, like, food inspires you to, like, start singing a song about that food. I could see how you got there.
All I want to do now is sing about guacamole. But instead, we got guacamole. Instead, we got to talk about pass interference. That was pretty good, actually. That was terrible. We're gonna talk about the pass interference rules that got passed. I ran it on them a little bit on Wednesday's show, but certainly having someone to talk with, especially a former professional football player like Brady Quinn, who you can follow on Twitter at 3RD_goal, and who you can watch on CBS Sports HQ, our live 24/7 streaming sports network. If you're tired of hot takes and bad arguments, unnecessary, forced arguments, and you want real sports talk for real sports fans, check out CBS Sports HQ, cbssports.com/live. What's the last thing you did on HQ, Brady?
Yeah, actually, I was just on earlier today, the morning and midday shifts. We talked about some of the rule changes. That was one of the obviously hot button topics, but also talked about some pro days. We talked about Carson Wentz, a potential contract extension for him. You and I hopefully can get to that a little bit later on, and we can discuss why, at least in my opinion, I think it's a really good deal for the Eagles. Not popular opinion because I think a lot of people are worried about his injury history. I'm not, and I'll explain why later on. But yeah, that was just some of the many things we talked about. And then I also realized I'm top 10 right now in the CBS bracket for March Madness. So
what?
I still have – oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm crushing it there. I'm leading my one for SiriusXM NFL. So I've been doing okay. I don't like to brag about it because I obviously went with the chalk method, which has really worked out quite well so far.
Oh, yeah. No, it has worked out for you. But, I mean, if you're leading – if you're top – this CBS sports bracket, the CBSI bracket group, I mean, this is a – you're talking about the big CBS bracket.
There's two separate ones. There's a pool that we did within the actual office, and it's like 40-some people are involved.
Uh-huh.
I'm like 10th in that.
Oh.
And I'd have to go online and check what I am in the other one that was sent out that's a little bit bigger than that. But I'm doing okay in those ones. I did one for another employer that I kind of changed up and tweaked some things as far as upsets and which teams I had marching forward. Like a couple of them I had Oregon going pretty far. So, unfortunately, those brackets, I think, which are the ones for CBS, are doing okay. Mm. The other ones, not so much.
Yeah. Not to go off on a tangent, but Oregon's – I've been floored by Oregon. I watched a lot of Pac-12 – a lot of the Pac-12 tournament. And, like, Washington was really – Washington was a really good team. And I thought that their zone was going to wreck Oregon. Oregon just doesn't care. Like, they lost Manute Bol's son, and – this Peyton Pritchard kid is like the quintessential NCAA tournament story. Louis the King is a fantastic player. I mainly watch so I could listen to Bill Walton, so I could live tweet Bill Walton's commentary. But yeah, I mean, this Oregon team is legit, man. I wouldn't be stunned if they were in the Final Four at all.
No. They're like one of those teams that's kind of gotten hot at the right time.
Yeah.
Really, even though they lost their best player, they've been able to figure it out around him, which few teams can do. Like, if Duke was to lose Zion, they'd be a mess because that team doesn't play the same when he's not on the court. They're fortunate he's there and he is playing the way he is right now. They're fortunate just to still be in the tournament. I thought UCF should have won. I thought they honestly, you know, outcoached Coach K, and I thought really, with the exception of just not dropping one bucket at the end, I should have won that game. But yeah, look, bottom line is I've been somewhat lucky with some of those picks. Oregon's been one of them. But I'm not so sure the officials are going to be very lucky next year, especially when having to make the decision the final 2 minutes of each half, which is really what they've been tasked with now with this new rule.
I thought you were making a segue to next year's NCAA tournament. I was like, what is he doing? It's like, you're right. I looked at the clock and I was about to go off on a different tangent about Duke. Good on you, Brady, for being the professional here and steering us back to the NFL. Maybe we can talk about some college basketball. I'll give a Calcutta update on my teams in the Calcutta later on. But I think that, I mean, this is, I said this yesterday in sort of a monologue to kick it off, because we talked to Pete Prisco from the owners meetings, but we recorded before this news broke. I mean, this is a major, major change and it's only for 1 year. Pass interference is reviewable, of course, for those that didn't see it or didn't hear it. And non-calls and calls alike, the first 28 minutes of each half will be subject to a challenge flag from a coach, and the final 2 minutes will be subject to official review like any other call in the last 2 minutes. Do you think that this is going to slow down games and make them less watchable in the style of college basketball these days?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think that's the biggest concern. And really, if that is a concern, then you apparently are more concerned about, you know, how long these games are, which, so what if it takes 2 or 3 minutes so that we get the call right? I mean, that's what the sacrifice is.
We're just
trying to ensure that we get the call right, in particular at the end of each half. I do find it interesting because here's what I like about the rule. The most punitive penalty that there is pass interference, in particular defensive PI. And I like the fact that they've chosen that particular penalty to make it reviewable, only because we know how big it impacts the game, whether it's in the first quarter, but also at the end of each half in a two-minute situation or the end of a game where the team's trying to come back. So for that reason, I like the fact that they picked that particular penalty, and maybe even only that penalty in its first year, to make it reviewable, either via a challenge by the coach or in the final 2 minutes by a replay assistant or replay official. The next thing I like is I think it adds an element of strategy.
Yes.
If you're a coach now and you want to start looking at when you want to use a challenge and how you want to use a challenge, you really have to think about whether or not, you know, you want to try to use that and when you use that, because not only are you obviously weighing like normal the ability to keep certain timeouts, but also just, you know, the way you use them, how it could impact a game, or when you don't use them, you know, if it impacts a game. So I think it gives us another talking point, and it adds an element of, you know, strategy that we could, it puts more pressure on the head coaches on how they use them. The thing I don't like is this. I think there could have been a safeguard where I don't know why you take out the coach's ability to use the challenge in the final 2 minutes of each half. I think that's dumb. I think you let that be the case, and if they feel like the officials miss something, so be it. You know, if the replay official missed something and they didn't see it, so be it. Let the coach challenge it and give you another look at it. The other thing I think is probably going to be the biggest issue with this entire new rule is the coaches, when they challenge, have to be specific. So they're going to say, hey, I think Will Brinson, number 26, committed pass interference versus number 80, Odell Beckham. And Lord knows you would in that scenario, because, you know, you're not very fast, even though you're fast for most of the group here at CBS.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Yes. Well, it's true. It's true. I think we've seen you in a foot race before. And that's one thing that you have bragged about yourself. You said, look, I have a great hair and I'm really fast. Outside of that, I can't really claim anything else. So
find the lie.
Right. Those coaches have to be specific. Now, in the final 2 minutes, that's not the case. The replay official is just looking across the field for pass interference, defensive or offensive. I think that's really hard to do. I think it's even harder to do when you're looking at a game copy, and I assume that's what they're going to be looking at. And then you've got to make that determination to stop play when they're potentially in a hurry-up offense scenario. So that to me becomes incredibly difficult to implement and then execute at a high level. And that's what we're asking out of these officials. So good luck with that portion of it. I do think this is a step in the right direction of getting it right. We all know that. And I do think it opens the door to expanding this to make everything reviewable. I am surprised, though, that they decided to make non-calls reviewable only because I think if, you know, look, the easy fix is you got to coach up the officials better. You got to make sure that they never let anything like what happened last year in the NFC Championship game happen again. And everyone's going to use that as the example. But the bottom line is if you're in, you know, when in doubt, throw the flag, right? I mean, coach those guys up to throw the flag if you think it possibly was, and then you can review it. And when you review it, especially, for example, the Joe Hayden penalty that was called when you went back and watched on tape last year, he didn't touch the guy in the back of the end zone. He didn't touch the guy. The official had a bad angle, never should have been called, and you can fix it. So I think that would have been an easier correction instead of making, you know, them able now to look at non-calls and then try to make that determination in real time. I just think they're going to have a really hard time doing that.
Okay, so I want to go back on a couple of things here that you mentioned in this pass interference stuff. One, first of all, and I've read the ruling. I've had some heavy dad lifting to do the last 24 to 48 hours. I was at this NC State Pro Day on Wednesday, and we're obviously recording this on Wednesday afternoon for Thursday morning. So in case anything else breaks, that's why, people. Although I point out Brady's like, maybe we should go back and button that up. Like when Jordy Nelson got cut and now Jordy Nelson retiring. Anyway, don't want to go off on a tangent as I am wont to do. Did you read something that said, like, do they specifically, I just haven't seen this. Do they specifically have to say, I want to challenge that there was a no call on pass interference and say the numbers of the players involved? Is that actually the case?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
That's actually the case. So I talked to Dean Blandino today and he confirmed that.
Perfect.
That is indeed what they're asking of the coaches when they challenge a non-call, but they do believe there was a penalty for pass interference, either offensively or defensively.
Okay, because that's a huge deal, and I don't think that's really been touched on a lot, at least from a media perspective, because when you think about how a lot of these challenges work on the field in play, oftentimes you see a situation where Andy Reid or Bill Belichick or whoever will throw the challenge flag and bring over the official and sort of talk through what's going on. And so, like, I mean, and maybe it'll still work the same way. Maybe they'll come over and say, hey, I think that was pass interference over there. And, you know, be like, well, I need you to specify it. They're not going to demand, like, I need it written it down. But I do think that makes a big difference. You can't just throw a challenge flag and be like, there was pass interference in the end zone on somebody. I mean, like, you need to know what the specific call is. And that to me is inherently makes it more difficult. From the strategy perspective, if I'm a head coach, I am squatting on my challenges unless there is a game-changing play or a game-changing error in the first half. There's no way I'm going to burn one of my challenges when I might need them later on down the road unless I'm 100% sure I'll get the overturn and get the third challenge, or unless it's a, you know, a clear fumble recovery that the officials have screwed up, that, and they would review that anyway for a change of possession. But you know what I'm saying? It would need to be something very serious for me to use my challenge flag, because otherwise I want to try and save him for those pass interference opportunities.
Right. And so there's a couple of cause and effects from this rule, right? The first thing I immediately think of, because I was scarred by this in 2009 when I was playing in Detroit for the Cleveland Browns, I had one of my best games, probably the best game of my career. And we end up being ahead, and there's just moments, seconds left. Matt Stafford throws up a Hail Mary to Calvin Johnson in the end zone. Ends up falling incomplete, but lo and behold, there's a flag on the ground for pass interference. So the Detroit Lions now, who are down by, I want to say at that point it was 7 points, because they needed a touchdown. And they what they did was they had an untimed down. He threw a touchdown pass. And then they went for two. So add insult to injury. They convert the two-point conversion, game over, we lose. So my first thought was, we're going to go into having a replay official now viewing pass interference on Hail Marys. Good luck, man. Everyone's out there tugging and pulling and doing all that. So there's going to be an issue with that. I think the way teams play down the stretching games, because of this rule. If I'm a quarterback, yes. I'm telling my guys to
yes.
throw vertical.
Yes.
I'm going to throw up shots and I'm going to take chances. And so it really, I mean, I think it's going to be exciting, but at the same time, it potentially will subject this game to be slowed down only because of the aggressive nature which offense is going to play with, and knowing that the repercussions are, yeah, they could potentially turn the football over, but yeah, they're going to lose the game if they don't take chances. And now they've got a replay official looking all across the board for defensive backs calling, you know, for pass interference. So, you know, I think that's some of the cause and effect with all this. And I've already mentioned why it's tough. I do think the thing you bring up though about squatting on some of the challenges, I'll be curious to see how they go about handling that, because, you know, you never know how in the beginning of the game, if you feel like something was, you know, a pretty monumental call and how it may impact the drive or field position, you know, maybe you want to take that opportunity and challenge that, because you don't know later in the game it's going to get better, and you don't necessarily know if you're going to need it, right? And the final 2 minutes, sure. If that's where you're trying to make up some ground of each half, you know, the officials hopefully taking care of that for you. So that's obviously one of the major rule changes that I think will obviously impact the season. It's going to be one to watch and see how it's going to be implemented. The other thing that I think was interesting, though, is the blindside block rule, which
I was a tweak before to you, a little bit. Before you do that, I was going to ask you, by the way, that game against Detroit, you went 21 of 33, 304 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. Can you name – you threw a touchdown to 4 different receivers. Can you name the receivers?
Oh, boy. Chancey Stuckey.
Yes.
Josh Cribbs.
Yes.
We had a tight end. Gosh, what was his name? Mm. I can't remember.
Michael Gaines.
That was Michael Gaines. That's right.
Yep.
And then I can tell you this much. If you go back and watch right before half, I hit Chris Jennings literally in between his numbers up the sideline on a wheel route. Should have been a 5th touchdown, but he dropped it, and we had to settle for a field goal. The other one, was it to Rubisky, or was it to – oh, it was Massacoy.
Muhammad Massacoy. Very nice. Yep. That's a good recall. I do think that – I think the strategy point on the Hail Marys is key, man, because I would, if I had, let's say you're the Denver Broncos, right? And you've got, and you're playing, I don't know, I'm trying, who's a grabby corner these days? All I can think of is Brandon Browner, but I mean, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, Richard Sherman kind of grabs from time to time, right?
Sure. Well, all right. So how about this? So you're the Broncos and you're playing the 49ers and it's week 17 and the season or whatever, any week, and it's the last 2 minutes of the game and you're trailing by 4 points. Just start sending Emmanuel Sanders or Cortland Sutton on vertical routes against Richard Sherman and have Joe Flacco throw it up and just tell your coach to have his penalty flags ready because you're going to try and get Richard Sherman to grab. Or, you know, if you get inside the 40, all of a sudden maybe you're not playing for that out route. Maybe you're playing like, all right, we got a better chance of this Hail Mary. If you can get it in the end zone and we can get somebody to take a dive and see if they can draw a flag. I think it's going to be interesting to see how guys operate in that. I'd like to think that they won't change it that much, but I have to imagine that smart teams will utilize the knowledge that refs tend to decide with the offense in these situations, and how the refs handle this pass interference stuff in the end zone is going to be interesting. But go back to the blindside block stuff now that I've detangented.
Yeah, so these things kind of tie, you know, hand in hand to something else I was thinking too. So obviously they changed the blindside blocks. They already existed. You weren't allowed to hit a player at the head or neck area if you're moving, I believe, toward your goal line or parallel to the line of scrimmage. So that already existed. What they've done now is basically just eliminated your ability to use your forearm, your shoulder, or your helmet in making contact with the defender in that manner. And that, you know, typically happens on special teams plays. It's a safety issue. It's why they're trying to eliminate the blindside blocks. It happens on turnovers, and then also it happens on end arounds. It is something, though, that's utilized a lot of times for offenses to get the edge, as they call it. They're basically trying to cut off the defense at the defensive end or outside linebacker spot, or whoever that force player is. It could be a safety that rotates down and is responsible for the D-gap. But either way, you know, they're trying to – usually they use a crack block with a wide receiver, or however they formation it, or they figure out a player, someone's a tight end, to get over there to do it. But either way, it will change the strategy in which how teams sometimes try to attack the outside run game. So that'll be interesting to see how that rule is implemented. But one rule now that's going to be into stay is the change in the kickoff rule. They changed the way that they can position players now. You can't overload a side. There's no more wedges. That's continued to stay the same. There's no running start. All those things have are going to remain the same moving forward, again, for player safety. What I think is kind of interesting, though, is as we move towards almost eliminating the importance of kickoffs, punts are still a part of the game. You might want to think about if you're a team that's typically got, you know, I don't know, four guys that are core special teams players outside of your kicker, punter, and long snapper, you might want to think about not taking as many core special teams guys only because you might have a wide receiver that for these Hail Mary situations or the final 2 minutes of the end of the half, the end of a game, maybe you want to put a Hakeem Butler in there to go jump up and make a play for the football. Otherwise, it's called pass interference. You know, maybe you want to carry a couple more guys that you feel like can stretch the field vertically at wide receiver, or to, in your strategy, just keep running go routes and you know, until you wear out one of these defenders where he grabs them so you get a PI. You know, those decisions, I think now, as far as the roster decisions, might end up being where we say, how much does this guy really impact our offense or defense for secondaries? So these guys can get breaks or get, you know, be able to help fill in a little bit only because, you know, the passing game is only going to become more and more prevalent as the rules tend to get implemented that protect the offense and really almost push the offense to want to throw the football more.
I couldn't agree with you more. And we're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk about some news.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Okay, that was a quick break. Thanks to somebody's son screaming about Oreos, me thinking he was dying. Nope, just hungry, Brady. What's your favorite?
For the record, I have two daughters.
Right.
But, yeah, what were you going to ask? What's my favorite cookie? Is what you going to say?
Yeah. How'd you know?
If I was going to pick one, honestly, like, I don't like any of that pre-made crap. You just got to make some good old fashioned chocolate chip cookies.
Sure.
And by the way, most people are pretty divided on crispy or soft, and I'm actually like kind of in the middle. Like I could have both, but I think I do. I do kind of sway more towards the side of like right out of the oven before they get too crisp, where they're like soft and kind of gooey. I think I side with that notion, like big chunks of chocolate.
Yeah.
None of that like mini little chocolate chip BS.
The best chocolate chip cookies of all time, my grandmother made them, and she would put them in like those cookie tins and stick them in the freezer. And so obviously those aren't soft, but my God. Oh man, we go down to Florida for Thanksgiving and just hammer back those cookies. I like the slightly charred edges. So they're like a little bit of crisp, but then you get into the actual cookie. And it's real, real soft. I also, I bought Robbie some, Robbie's a big, M&M's fan. So I bought him some, Chips Ahoy or maybe Keebler chocolate chip cookies, but with M&M's on them. Pretty good.
Those are solid. Those are, yeah, I was gonna say, any like cookie with some M&Ms in it, it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Also solid, Carson Wentz. What a terrible segue that is. But don't care. That's what we're gonna do. Carson Wentz.
Oh, can before we get to Wentz, can we just talk about a couple more like rules I thought was interesting? That the overtime rule got shelved. I thought that was kind of interesting because it seems like fairly obvious. Either you are for both teams touching it or you're not.
Yeah.
But the owners, for whatever reason, want to push that to May. And when I asked Dean about that, I wondered if that was more a product of just them needing to do more research, which, again, they knew that was coming up at this point in time of the year. They knew it was on the agenda.
They do this all the time, though. Like, why? What do you need more research? You know, you had 3 months to prepare for this. What do you need research for?
Right, and again, it's a polarizing deal. Either you feel that they should each get a touch, or you don't. Like, I don't know that there's a lot of persuasion in it. And then I asked him, does other leagues like the AAF, when they implement a rule, for example, like the onside kick rule, where they eliminate the onside kick because I think, what, two teams recovered onside kicks last year.
Yeah.
And instead implement a strategy like, I think it's 4th and 12 in the Alliance. John Elway proposed a 4th and 15 scenario to the NFL that got shot down. I asked him, I said, is there some degree of, we're the NFL and we don't do that because we're the NFL? And he said, they'll never admit it, but you definitely get that feeling because it wasn't their idea or it's not their rule.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to implement it into their game. And I think it's sad if that is the case, because that only holds back the NFL from ultimately putting forth the best product and really making it the safest product too. I think the one thing college football has done that would have solved last year's NFC Championship game crisis with Mikel Roby-Coleman and Tommy Lee Lewis was implementing a way to, no matter what point in time in the game, if there is a personal foul and it involves player safety, like a player getting hit to the head and neck area, to be reviewed and then be penalized for it, right? At any point in time, that would have fixed that play and it would have solved probably some other plays moving forward. If that was a part of this replay rule, it's not a part of it. College has it. They call it targeting. It kind of falls under that, and they have different degrees of it. But I kind of sit here and just say to myself, it doesn't put forth the best product, and it doesn't make it the safest game for the players either. So it's a bit sad if that is the case, but that's just kind of my final two thoughts on the whole, you know, rules being implemented and changed or those that were put on the back burner.
Well, I appreciate you again being the professional here. I just moved on to news. You went through this great explanation of another rule, and I was like, yes, that's great. I agree. Let's go to break, because my child was screaming. So I was like trying to. It's a weird thing when your kids are like five is a weird age, because he's fine by himself. And he'll scream if he wants something, but I don't want to be like, he's just screaming about Oreos. And then I talk to you for 30 more minutes and then I walk downstairs and my son's impaled on a fork or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that would be,
right.
That would be less than,
That's the joys of parenting, is like you hear a scream and your instinct is they're in trouble, they're in need. And then you find out it's something minor. But again, this is very similar to what my wife and I always talk about with babysitters. So a lot of times, Our oldest daughter's at the age where she's almost three. She's really 2 3/4. But she's at the point where she loves to be put down by mommy or daddy. So if it's not mommy or daddy, it's a little bit more difficult. We know that. We don't want to like ruin, you know, our date nights and not be able to have a babysitter by making them put her down. So we try to wait until the kids are down for the babysitter to come over.
Sure.
Well, the issue with that is you're saying to yourself, we could, like, anyone could do this, right? Anyone could just sit in our house and let us know if the babies wake up or if there's an issue. So really, like, it's like an insurance policy that you're probably never going to need to use it, but you're paying for it because otherwise you'll get judged if you ever said, yeah, we went out for dinner, and we didn't have anyone home to watch the kids, even though we're watching them at the table on our monitor and could leave if we need to. No, we've got the 16-year-old across the street there to watch. It's not like she's going to be able to do anything if there's an emergency besides call 911 if it's that drastic of a situation. But again, These are the reactions and thoughts that you have when you're a parent, because really you just don't want to look bad. Like, that's what it is. If there's a kid screaming and you go, and you're negligent and you don't go see if they're okay, even though it could be about Oreos, it could be about something very, very worse. There's just a 1% chance that's probably the case.
That's exactly. Robbie did this the other day. He's upstairs, hanging out in during quiet time, and I hear "Daddy," and I was like, "Oh God!" I sprint up, "What's up, buddy?" He's like, "I want Oreos and milk in bed." I was like, "No, man! Like, what are you?" I'm downstairs, like, doing busy stuff. He's like, "You're watching golf." I'm like, "What? That's or no, maybe I was watching college. I was watching like the NCAA tournament." Anyway, let's get to some NFL news. You actually scared me because you said that you're like Carson Wentz extension. I was like, "What?" And I was out at the NC State Pro Day. I was like, "Oh my God, Carson Wentz got an extension." He didn't, but the Eagles, Howie Roseman has basically, I don't say admitted, but he's basically has been open, like, we're going to work to extend Carson Wentz. And to me, it's a no-brainer. Of course you're going to work to extend Carson Wentz. And if you're going to extend him, I actually think, and this may be your take as well, so I don't want to steal your thunder, step on your toes or anything, but I actually think even though you're utilizing his window of a small rookie contract and his salary, it would not be a terrible idea, given his injury history, to extend him now rather than have him play 16 games, put up an MVP caliber numbers, and then have to give him $35 million a year. I think you could maybe get a little bit of a bargain if you went ahead and hammered that thing out this offseason.
Yeah, so I feel the exact same way. Yes. So the counter argument to that is going to be, look at his injury history. He had injuries back when he was at North Dakota State.
Yeah.
He's had injuries he missed the entire preseason as a rookie, even though he did start and play all 16 games, and they go 7-9. Remember that hot 3-0 start? They had the bye, and then after that, they started to kind of not fall apart, but he started to look like a rookie. The next year, he's an MVP candidate. Then he gets hurt again this past year with the knee injury. This past year, ended up being a fractured bone in his back, ended up having back spasms, issues with that. And so, I think as much as you say, yeah, of course, extend him, it sounds great in theory, but I think if I am Carson Wentz and I'm trying to maximize my value, I might say to the team, regardless of what they throw at me, yeah, I'm okay. I would like to just go ahead and play out this year, show you what I'm capable of for a full 16 games and into the playoffs, and that I can do what Nick Foles did. Because, look, they obviously picked up the option on Foles, but at the same time, I think they realized that he was going to move on, and he did. In a way, they could have franchise tagged Foles. They could have figured out something else, but they know Carson's their future, so that's the direction they're going. But I think from Carson's standpoint, regardless of what they offer him, I think you might want to wait. And here's the other reason why. Unless they give him, because if we talk market value right now, his value should be, or he should be aiming at, $33 million average annual salary. That should be his goal. That's what Aaron Rodgers is getting. People are going to look at him in the same light. And you might say, well, he doesn't have a Super Bowl and he's not the caliber of Aaron Rodgers yet. And I'd say, yeah, you're right. But that's not what his contract's going to be betting on. They're betting on that he will be. And so that's what they're going to pay him. And so it does make sense to, try to pay him as soon as you can, because that number's only going to go up with the salary cap going up. But it's also, there's also a thought that, you can put in some of those clauses and all that with his injury history. You're going to do that regardless of when he signs this contract. So to me, I wouldn't be so shocked if they didn't come to an agreement, only because that number is going to be really, really high. It should be $33 million average annual salary a year. And his guarantees, if he really wants to be groundbreaking, he should try to get 4 years of guarantees.
Mm.
So do the math on that. You're talking about $130 million total guaranteed at signing. That's what he should be aiming for if he really wants to stay within the market value. And I'll just finally say this. For those who think that that's some huge percentage of the cap, it's not. Stop saying that. Stop thinking that, you can't pay this quarterback all this money and build a roster around him, okay? The salary cap this year is like almost $189 million, okay? So let's just fast forward a year. And the salary cap goes up by roughly about $10, $11 million a year. So let's just say it's at a round number, $200 million, and he's going to make $33 million a year. If you go and look at the numbers, that's like 16.5% of the cap at $200 million. That is on the high end, but it's not outrageous. We've seen teams before allocate 20% of their cap in a given year to the quarterback position. So granted, it's one player, but it's the player you're betting on to win your Super Bowl. And that's really what you have to look at when you're looking at teams' cap allocation, is the percentage devoted to that position, because they'll be all in on Wentz. That'll be their plan. 16.5% may sound like it's on the high end, or maybe, you know, is on the high end initially. It's only going to go down as the cap continues to go up.
Yeah, that's true. And also in Eagles news, Jeffrey Lurie wants to bring back the Chip Kelly green uniforms. Or the Kelly, is it Chip Kelly or just Kelly green uniforms?
It's just Kelly green. But you can call it the Chip Kelly green, even though I think the last
player
that I remember wearing it. What's that?
Did they use him during Chip Kelly's run? Am I crazy?
Maybe they did. I remember Kevin Kolb. I remember Kevin Kolb wearing it and balling in one of the games. He was wearing Kelly green.
I love the idea of the Kelly green, and I love the idea that we could call it
I'm a huge Kelly green.
Well, let's call it Chip Kelly green. Is Kelly green the green for Notre
Chip
Dame?
Kelly green.
Is Kelly green, is that the green for Notre Dame?
You know, it goes back and forth. It's been a Kelly green before, and then it was like a dark green when I was there, and then it was
the green, like Kelly green is one of the greens they use for the colors for Notre Dame, right? Like, I mean.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Well,
okay.
Especially now with Brian Kelly green. So, yeah.
Oh, you're right. Do you think that Brian Kelly green would acknowledge that it is actually Chip Kelly green?
No, I think he's going with Brian Kelly green, and as he should.
Yeah, of course he should. Shamrock green. It's a Shamrock green, right? Sort of?
Sure.
Okay, all right.
I don't think so.
Okay, not Shamrock green. That wasn't an Irish attack on anybody Irish. I'm pro-Irish. I don't know where I'm going with this. You know what? I'm getting close to the point of this podcast, Brady, where I might need a cell phone break. Because we're
a 20-minute one?
Yeah.
It's funny. Do you view that as, you know, more of, okay, so here's what I thought.
Well, we should lay out what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically Cliff Kingsbury announced that he's going to provide his players a 20-minute cell phone break in between meetings, which on the outside looking in, you're saying, oh, what a mistake. This guy's first year head coach in the NFL. What is he doing? He's just adapting to the types of players and the culture that he's got with players coming in now. This is a part of their lives. Like, I remember my last year in training camp with the Dolphins in 2014, some of the older guys would kind of be talking and social in the locker room, but you know what most guys did? They walked back to the locker, they grabbed their cell phone, they turned around, sat down, they sat there until their break was over, and then they went back to meetings. Now, some coaches allow them to bring book bags and whatnot in there, and some players will probably check their phone or, you know, tweet or text or whatever during meetings. But I think this allows you as a head coach to basically say to your players, look, I've given you a 20-minute break to go do that, all right? So I don't want that crap in our meetings. If you got them, it's going to be a fine. I want you focused on football. We're going to have shorter meetings. They're going to be quick. So we've got your attention, and we're not going to put too much on your plate, but we're going to execute at a really high level at the stuff that we do. And so I think it's actually smart. I think it's a good sign for Arizona. Like, this is a sign of a coach that is young. He understands and can relate to a lot of the players that are in their locker room and is willing to adapt and change based on the type of personality he has. So I love the decision. I'm not sure how it hit you.
Well, I mean, my initial response is here's what I would say. I would say a couple of things. One, everybody has breaks for meetings. Okay. Like anybody who has a meeting, any type of meeting in any business in anywhere in the entire world, they take breaks. I check out if I'm in a meeting and it goes past 90 minutes, I'm done. I'll just gloss over anything. Yeah. And so,
right, but let me say this. It's not always, like, mandated by the head coach like this is.
Of course.
So I would say this.
Of course.
Eric Mangini would have never done it. There's countless other head coaches that I play for. John Fox never would have done this. Now, your individual coach might provide you a break to go to the bathroom. I was going to say take a piss. I'm not sure if you can say that.
You can say that, sir.
But not specifically to go be on the cell phone or whatever else. So I do think it is unique in that perspective. Like, yeah, breaks are provided, but to specifically sit there and say, like, yeah, these dudes are going to go check their cell phone, so why not, you know, basically call what it is and not beat around the bush with it? Like, I think there's something about that stands out compared to other coaches, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think, too, like, what if Bill Belichick, what if they're talking to Belichick, and he's like, yeah, we're going to start doing these 20-minute breaks every 20 minutes, you know, to check their phones. People are like, this guy's so locked in on the next generation of players. This is why Belichick is ahead of the curve. He's seeing things. He's playing four-dimensional chess while the rest of the NFL is playing checkers. He understands the new generation. Kingsbury does it. They're like, oh, handsome McGood-looking pants is, you know, he's straight from college. And he just thinks he can come in and change the world and have it work. I mean, your leadership style, whatever your leadership style you want it to be, if you think that hitting these kids in spurts works, then do it. I mean, I think, you know, different approaches, different strokes for different folks can work. And I think Kingsbury, I mean, at the very least, understands how to tap into the mindset of the demographic that he's working with.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, by the way, you kind of made the Mick reference to like McDreamy from Grey's Anatomy, which I think is where like that whole thing started about. Like,
that's right.
You know, McDreamy and all that.
Although, we
use that for everyone. So should it be like Mick Kingsbury at this point?
Ooh.
Is that what we're going to call him in the NFL?
I will say that I think The Simpsons might have been ahead of it with Hootie McBoobity. Now, McDreamy,
like most things in life, The Simpsons are ahead of that.
Simpsons did it. I think McDreamy, we'll just call him McKingsbury. And that way you get the Irish action. You get the Mick jokes already built in there. It's presumed that, you know, handsome Dreamy is just Kingsbury. So that works completely well. I like it. Let's roll with it. I don't mind the meetings thing. I mean, if he wants, now look, we talked about Kingsbury a lot on this podcast, and the Cardinals, Pete Prisco, by the way, was on yesterday and says, I'm curious what you're hearing or what you think, how this plays out, Brady, but he says he feels very convinced at an ownership level that this franchise has bought into the idea of taking Kyler Murray first overall. And they'll just figure out what to do with Josh Rosen. I mean, all of these decisions by the Cardinals, whether it's the Kyler Murray thing, Josh Rosen, cell phone meetings, you know, whoever you hire, all these things, it's all going to come down to whether the Cardinals win games or lose games in terms of how we judge them. We're going to be a totally results-based business when it comes to Cliff Kingsbury.
Right. And that's why I think when you think about the way Cliff has handled himself in his first offseason, going into his first draft, and really a free agency where, I mean, look, this – the rhetoric behind the hiring of Cliff Kingsbury was, oh, he's not going to be able to hire NFL head coaches. Who's his defensive coordinator again? Like, didn't he just go get a guy in Vance Joseph who was just a former head coach and who's viewed as a solid defensive coach? And in some circles, there's one. There's other guys, too. Pretty sure Larry Fitzgerald signed on to come back to play for him. That's a pretty big get for a future Hall of Famer. And then it's all been, well, you know, how are they going to handle that free agency? How are they going to handle the draft? They've signed a bunch of free agents, guys who have proven themselves, too. Those guys haven't had any issue coming to play for Cliff Kingsbury. And then on top of it, the narrative that they've portrayed right now, saying we don't know what we're going to do with the number one pick, and at the same time talking about Kyler Murray but talking about Josh Rosen, it's literally left you with, okay, either it's the greatest smokescreen of all time or it's the worst kept secret ever. And I honestly at this point do not know. I know what Vegas says. Vegas has Kyler Murray being taken number one overall as an overwhelming favorite. But there's definitely a chance that they don't. I mean, it's not like Josh Rosen wouldn't fit Cliff Kingsbury's system, and he said as much at the owners' meetings. I mean, bottom line is Baker Mayfield, who was a freshman there at Texas Tech with him, is more of a drop-back-style quarterback. Davis Webb, who got drafted in the NFL, was as well. Even Patrick Mahomes. I mean, for as many plays as he's made in Kansas City running around, he did a little bit of that in Texas Tech, but he's also a pocket passer if you watch the majority of his film. And then even if you look at his team this past year, I mean, really, Jet Duffy, who was a highly touted recruit, who's a better athlete, they're trying to make him more of a pocket passer. But, you know, it wouldn't really work out. It's one of the reasons why he hasn't played as much, because he hasn't been able to learn the game from that. And Alan Bowman, their freshman, who's a pocket passer. So, you know, people, for whatever reason, think, you know, all of a sudden he can't figure out how to use a guy like Kyler Murray in his system or Josh Rosen in his system. I mean, he's got a plan for both. And I don't think he has any issue, given the fact that he played as a pocket passer at Texas Tech and in the NFL for a little bit. So they could be blown a smokescreen this entire time, and they're going to take Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams number one overall, or trade out of the pick if someone doesn't give them something good enough, or if someone gives them something good enough for and keep Josh Rosen as the quarterback. So I just think the way he's handled it, the media and everything else that's gone along with it,
So far, he's done a very good job in his first year as a head coach. And we haven't even played games yet, even though that will ultimately be how he's going to be, looked at.
It's almost like you get bonus points for acting like you don't know what you're doing. Not that I'm saying he's doing that, but by acting somewhat, not confused, but somewhat, a lot of times you hear these new coaches come out and say, we got it. Like, we have a concrete plan. This is what we're doing here, here, and here. And by being like, hey, you know, it's still early. Like, we don't know. We'll see what happens. Anything can happen. Now, he talks about Kyler Murray, and you can see it in his eyes. He looks like he's a little McDreamy for Kyler Murray. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is a smokescreen. I agree with you. It is. There's no way to tell, based on what he and Steve Keim have done and said, exactly what they're going to do. I think most people assume they don't know what they're going to do. Maybe it's the opposite.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, when you hear a general manager like Dave LeGettleman come out and say, you know, we didn't sign Odell Beckham to, you know, trade him, and you hear him say that multiple times, and then he turns around and does it. It comes off as, you know, he needs to be dishonest in order to, you know, drum up value for Odell Beckham or act like they really need him. I mean, I don't know that Cliff Kingsbury has played his hand either way. And I think he's been honest about it. Like, could Josh Rosen fit in the system, and are they really high on him? Yeah, of course, because he was a first round quarterback last year. I'm sure most people watched the film on him and watched him in college and feel very good about him. So I'm sure they feel like they can make it work with him. That's why they drafted him last year. You know, it was one of Steve Keim's picks. But this year, could they have an upgrade with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury's system? Yeah, maybe. So, just the whole thing, I think the way they've played it, they've created this deception, if you will, of what they're going to do. I think it's been pretty savvy for a guy that a lot of people were concerned about taking on this job as a head coach. I think he's done a great job thus far handling it.
Yeah. Okay. Elsewhere in the news, the Pittsburgh Steelers are drawing attention because of their public. Are they sniping? I don't even know what's going on there. You know, Mike Tomlin's getting Big Ben's back. Juju Smith-Schuster is posting Instagram photos of Big Ben and him. Then Antonio Brown is subtweeting Juju Smith-Schuster's Instagram photos. It's like a fifth grade dance. I mean, why are Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown not just let it go? You got your new teams. You got your money. Let it go. Move on. And yet at the same time, you know, you can't help but notice that Mike Tomlin and everybody else is sort of willing to take shots at those guys on their way out the door, too. It feels like all parties would be better off if they just sort of took a breath and maybe took a vacation.
Yeah, but that's what happens when, you know, you play and have success together and spend so much time together. You know, it becomes emotional. You know, you're passionate about what you're able to accomplish and work together and all that. So it's not easy to move on. And I think that's what you're seeing a little bit in social media play out. But I think where there's smoke, there's fire. Are there questions about Ben Roethlisberger's leadership? Of course. That's why you see people all of a sudden kind of calling him out and questioning him. So I'm sure he could improve as a leader. I don't think that's any well-kept secret. I think that's why you see guys like Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown now airing out that grievance. Because if you think about it, you know, Le'Veon Bell didn't have an issue with Ben Roethlisberger. His issue was he wanted more money from the Steelers and a better contract for them for the long term. So it wasn't Ben Roethlisberger holding him back from that. And even Antonio Brown, like I know Ben Roethlisberger being critical of Antonio Brown led to this fracture that's occurred between the two. But again, Antonio Brown wanted a new contract. He wanted more financial security, which he got from the Raiders after the trade. So I don't know that that was the whole issue either with Ben Roethlisberger. If the Rooney's paid Antonio Brown $30 million guaranteed this offseason, do you think Ben Roethlisberger and Tony Brown want to bury the hatchet somewhere? Of
yes,
course.
Yes.
So, like, the weird thing is, you know, to some degree, Antonio Brown's probably right when he makes comments to Juju Smith-Schuster that Juju Smith-Schuster is just saying all the right things because he hasn't been paid yet. It's true. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster is now the number one wide receiver. He now is going to have to be put in that spot, have production in order to be paid what he wants to be paid. And then it'll be interesting to see how he views Ben Roethlisberger or if he views him in the same light, especially if Big Ben's as critical of Juju Smith-Schuster for as active as he is in social media and everything off the field. And if he's going to, you know, be okay with Big Ben calling him out on his radio show during the week, during the course of the season or in the offseason. So it's an interesting dynamic, and I think it's it's odd to see this continually, circulate through. But at some point, I just think it's best that everyone just moves on and goes their separate ways.
I think you're right. All right. Anything else from the news that struck your fancy coming out of the owners' meetings? Jordy Nelson retired, as we mentioned. No real surprise there. Wasn't hugely effective for the Raiders. Jordy Nelson's not a Hall of Famer, is he? I don't think so.
No, Jordy Nelson had a great career. I mean, bottom line. And sure. When I think of him, I think of, Rodgers to Nelson. It was probably Aaron's most consistent, reliable wide receiver. Maybe Donald Driver is the other one you could throw in that conversation. But when you think of Aaron Rodgers, how great he is on the other end of that pass is Jordy Nelson. What a great career. A guy that epitomized as a quarterback what you're looking for. He was always where he's supposed to be. He had good hands. He got yards after the catch. He blocked his tail off. Just a good guy. I mean, overall, he's the type of guy that every quarterback loves to have. I'm a bit surprised he retired. I wouldn't have been shocked if he would have found his way to New England. And it's not like he didn't have some production last year with the Raiders. So it just depends on what price, and maybe he didn't have to go through a new offense and being with those guys. But that kind of leads me to Gronk. I know it's old news now, but I do still think there's a chance he could come back. And now that if he's not going to be there, you kind of wonder what does Tom Brady have left out around him? I don't know, but it's Tom Brady and it's Bill Belichick. And I'm not going to bet against them in the AFC East just because Gronk's not there. No offense to him, because they'll probably draft, Hockenson, Fan, or Irv Smith in the draft this year. And they'll be able to figure out a way of making that guy productive.
If you had a guess off the top of your head, how many Pro Bowls did Jordy Nelson make in the 10-year career he had in the NFL?
Five.
One. What the hell? How did I was like, wow. I did a double take while I was looking at his stats. He made one Pro Bowl in 2014 when he had 1,519 yards. He didn't make the Pro Bowl in 2016 when he was coming off an ACL, had 152 targets, 97 catches, and 14 receiving touchdowns to lead the league. Man, that's...
Wasn't he the comeback player of the year that year, though?
I think that is correct, yeah. Yes, he was NFL comeback player of the year in 2016. Yes, but I would have given him, because he missed all of 2015. Remember, he tore his ACL in the third preseason game. Missed, I guess he's probably not a borderline Hall of Famer, but you hate the ACL tear and you lose that entire season and then you get to your 30s. And, he had a good career, made a bunch of money. I forgot we hadn't talked about Gronk too. I think Gronk is happy going away. I think he's 30. He's going to retire with his health. He just won a Super Bowl ring. He's rich beyond his wildest dreams. He can go and do Gronk stuff. And, he's not tied down with a wife or kids or anything. Got a girlfriend, but I don't know. I feel like he's going to enter the prime of his adulthood, at 30 with tons of money and no real concerns in life.
I'll put it this way. Rob Gronkowski knows how to party, and you know what makes those people the best at knowing how to party? They know when to leave. They know and have a feeling for when the party is going to be on its descent. And I think he's kind of looking at it for himself personally from a health perspective with that thought in mind, but also looking at the team, looking at what they accomplished. There's no guarantee they're going to go back to the Super Bowl and win it again next year. So what better way than being the guy that helped set up the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl?
It's his final catch.
Getting another ring and then sailing off into the sunset, right?
That's a great – the party – in fact, somebody like Gronk, if you want to carry the analogy a little bit further, the party ends when he leaves.
Right. That's – and then maybe that is the case.
Yeah, maybe so.
But – no matter how you look at it, I think that's the best analogy is this guy is kind of known for his work hard, play hard, and I think he knows when the party's ending. So in this respect, this is the end of the party for him, but obviously he's going to have plenty of opportunities. And I think, honestly, not to compare sports, but Dwayne Wade said it best. Someone asked Dwayne Wade, because he's in his final season in the NBA, if he could play two or three more years. He said, yeah, actually I could. He goes, I want to walk the way I feel like I'm walking today.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's some element of that for Rob Gronkowski, where he's saying, could he eke out another couple of years, a few years, maybe. but you know, he wants to still get to live the life that he can once he's done playing. And I think, you know, we all can appreciate that. He was one of the greatest tight ends of all time during the time of his career, especially when healthy.
Yep. No, I agree completely. Gronk, you'll be missed, buddy. Gronk's been on this podcast once or twice, promoting some sort of thing, but he's been on the podcast nonetheless.
Of course. He doesn't come on unless he's promoting something.
Yeah, so. Gronk's a great.
Was it nudicles? Yeah. It's been like a piece of weight equipment, right?
I think it was like Tide Pods.
Yeah, he's big on that, which is interesting because of all the NFL players, because, you know, there's that big scare about eating Tide Pods.
Who's most likely?
He'd be the one that I would think, he'd be most likely to eat a Tide Pod.
Right.
He'd like, be like, I thought it was a gummy bear or something. I don't know, you know? I want to see what it tastes like. He'd be the one that I would expect to do that.
Jaeger-flavored Tide Pods. Also, least likely to wash his own clothes, right? I mean, he's right up there in terms of.
Well, no. The thing is like, look, people picture him for, you know, like washing clothes. Like, he wears like tank tops and shorts everywhere. It's like, not like there's much to wash. You know, he's got to wear his muscle shirt, his little tank top, and he's got his shorts, whatever. That's pretty much it. So, it seems like that's all the guy wears.
You're right. All right. We got to get out of here. Brady Quinn, as always, a pleasure. We'll do this again next week. We're heading towards the draft. We'll talk about draft guys as we get closer. Thanks, man. Good talking to you.
All right, sounds good.